to the listener. "Come, Watson, come," he cried. "The game is afoot. Not a word. Into your clothes and come." These are the immortal words that Arthur Conan Doyle put into the mouth of Sherlock Holmes, the undefeated detective who was the master of all deduction. Holmes uttered the words, "The game is afoot!" At the beginning of most of his adventures, and it shows Conan Doyle's somewhat sarcastic approach towards signs of deduction. Later, humoristic persiflage of Sherlock Holmes proclaimed, "If the criminal could be expected to be 20-inch tall, with hair on hands and feet, and accompanied by a large goat, whatever improper this possibility seemed, it must be the truth." It usually was, though even Sherlock Holmes never ceased to stop amazing his audience by improper, though correct, deductions. Improbability of outcomes is exactly the issue of his adventures. Writing about perceptions and expressions of individual bodies seems a similar undertaking. It cannot be called a game of chance, but it is nevertheless dominated by improbable outcomes. In this sense, the topic has been approached as a challenge to the deductive capacity of social science from the early 20th century. Here, the similarities between Sherlock Holmes and early 20th century fall absent. For Conan Doyle proceeded where rational science ceased to develop. Conan Doyle was as much a fantasy novelist as a scientist. The contemporary flow of scientific undertaking in his time did not, or at least pretended not, to allow for speculation of any sort beyond the boundaries of scientific premises about the differences between fantasy and science. Fantasy became part of science within psychology. The dream could be analyzed as text, as an image of the mind referring to a psychological reality, for instance through the work of Freud. This in turn supported the idea of the psychological concept in developing linguistic theory, allowing the word to become disconnected from its object, of its name or body, while simultaneously creating the notion of the arbitrariness of signs in the work of Whitney and de Saussure. From a cultural anthropological point of view, especially theories of social Darwinists supported the theory of racial development in terms of levels of culture and realities of knowledge. Within the natural sciences, this was further constipated by philosophers like Karl Popper. Rationality, as the greater good of scientific theory since then, has dominated every view of individual perception and expression. Science entered its secondary age of enlightenment, maintaining beliefs in ever higher and better levels of knowledge. Generalization and rationality became undeniably linked to both the quality and the quantity of scientific theory. Yet, simultaneously, the result of this scientific quest for rationality brought about the disappearance of the individual bodily experiences of both researcher and researched. As the testing of hypotheses became the center of scientific interest, the model for testing became more important than its referential reality. The rationality quest did not seek for origins in individual perception anymore. not in language, not in the world of religion, not of instinct or intuition, neither of the domains of individual body expression. If an individual experience could not be translated to any level of general laws, it could not become a theory and would therefore remain in the domain of sheer obscurantism, a fantasy, never to reach the real world. Yet, ever since scientists started to believe that they constituted science, their individual bodies have been the source of their scientific values. One can presume they would never be able to produce anything without their bodies as a commencement of reverence. Unless they were gods, of course. It must be said that the abandonment of individual experience had indeed very much to do with the problem of repetition in the phenomena which scientists were inclined to study. Through repetitions, it seemed obvious that others could check the value of scientific statements, repetition itself sharing a common ground. Intuitive sources and experiences seemed less important once a causal chain of phenomena could be established. More than rationality initially served as a criticism of the logical positivism of Auguste Comte and his consorts, who seeked confirmation through induction, mainly creating a possibility of moral imperatives. But in this war against induction, other more dominating assumptions in social science could escape criticism completely. These assumptions consisted of the Cartesian body and mind splits, the domination of language as a vehicle for generalization in science, the domination of culture as a vehicle of social relations, and the expectation of a science developing along the lines of increased objectivism. These basic assumptions, for better or for worse, dominated every theory concerning individual body perception and expression, while at the same time establishing absolute control over the theories concerning the oppositions between self and the other, individual and society, freedom and restraint, and last but not least, independency and dependency. The basic assumptions have also become so self-evident that the repetition of the aforementioned oppositions seem to have befallen the faith of social science. In itself, I feel quite content with the idea that science changes and grows. In itself, change would prevent science from becoming dogmatic, tautological, and a highly dangerous instrument. The question, however, is, does it actually change through the endless repetition of oppositions? As I mentioned before, all changes seem to occur generally at the expense of the individual bodily experience. I personally would not give up so many years of my life for the sake of generalized laws that risk the destruction of so many free perceptive moments. This audio, then, is an attempt to deconstruct the underlying assumptions concerning individual body perception and expression, and to remove the topic itself from the everlasting battle between body and mind. It has not been an easy task, as scientific language categories are so much interwoven into common perception that at least Western discourse hardly allows for a language both by and of individual bodies. It is therefore not by chance that deconstructing language models have become such a dominant part of my efforts. Simultaneously, both deconstructions of the older categories as well as the attempts to create a space for individual expression by crossing the boundaries of various genres nowadays are under constant attack. crossing the boundaries of various disciplines and genres is basically postmodernistic. The phenomena are not easy to grasp, as there seem to be as many postmodernists as there are individuals. As always, some make sense and some do not. But, although I am a very pessimistic person, I cannot but view the attempts of postmodernists as a reaction on a smothering universal moralism, which does not allow for an individual body to be what it is, but instead constantly pushing individuals to become part of one generalized category or another. I will call these generalized category body images. I consider these body images as simulacra of reality, consisting of linguistic constructions, determining what individual bodies should be. I also want to introduce a difference between abstraction and generalization. Contrary to popular belief, I feel that the two are not interchangeable. I view generalization, which appears as a sort of Cartesian abstraction, as an explanation principle which first reduces particles of phenomena and then categorizes them into universal laws. I view abstraction as the capacity of individual bodies to communicate their private experiences with other individual bodies. This capacity for abstraction, emanating from individual body perception, has in fact very little to do with the possibilities and goals of science. I have maintained the term individual body perception and expression to explicitly maintain that this book is not about the history of individualism as constructed through the history of Western philosophical thought. For the same reason, I have restrained myself to give a singular definition of what individual body perception and expression is. The underlying argument of this book is that such a definition would do no more than deliver an a priori body image which immediately motivates an inescapable sequence of oppositions, which in fact restrain bodies from perceiving and expressing themselves individually. I will argue that the acknowledgement of individual body expression and perception as the dynamic force behind scientific theory is a social necessity rather than an a priori truth, which could prevent science from creating models for the sake of a social hierarchy. I will show that there are views on language and culture which deny individual expression, just as there are views of language and culture which focus on individual expression. It will be argued that the individual body is given a position of an enlightened animal, and the lack of attention given to individual expression originates from the lack of power individual expression has in relation to the generality of language. Individual bodies are in this audio not viewed as persons with private language, inner structures, or autonomous bodies in space. They are seen as personal entities being in this world both detached and attached, characterized by differences which cannot be exterminated by any general theory. In the following tracks, I will explain how I view the relation between language and individual body perception and expression. I decided to connect the topic predominantly with the work of Roland Barthes and Edward Sapir. I found that Roland Barthes has exemplified the position of the individual body within Western discourse quite unlike any other contemporary scientist. Edward Sapir I view as one who has exemplified a theory of language with regard to culture and individual originality equally unique. I will first describe the differences between generalization and abstraction, by which means the body has been expelled or incorporated into scientific discourse. This will constitute the background of existing body images as models in relation to contemporary society, as well as the state of affairs concerning the image of the senses within contemporary Western thought. Secondly, I will deal with the existential conflict which evolves between individual expression and discursive language, and how the body participates in this conflict as a model or an image of individuals. Two dominating conditions which structure models of hierarchy in existing scientific theory will serve as examples. This will show how perceptual suppositions about consciousness and subconsciousness in hierarchical models prevent scientists from accentuating individual expression. Thirdly, I will explain that causal change of significance further support hierarchical models used in scientific theory. It will be argued that the term, like subconscious, implies emptiness, nothingness, and slavery. This term is used in a hierarchical opposition to the term consciousness, which implies percepts, freedom of action, and morality. I also argue that replacing objectivity by intersubjectivity, relativity, or dialectics does not have the intended effect of disrupting such hierarchical oppositions as long as they are primarily within the domain of language. At the end of this chapter, I will conclude which options, but more precisely, which preconditions could be called available points of view.